People in the hotel industry may be hoping that wherever he is, that he's paying his hotel bill, because that industry has been hammered in this recession. One part of it, though, has actually seen a building boom. Big hotel chains like Hyatt and Marriott and Starwood are rolling out lines of specialty hotels. Kurt Nickisch of member station WBUR in Boston sent us this report from one such hotel that recently opened there.
What you and I think of the lobby, the new W Boston Hotel calls its living room. Plunked down in one of the leather pods, and you can admire the polished granite floors by leaning back and seeing them reflected in the mirror on the ceiling. In the evening, the staff turns the lights down and the music up. W is part of a big hotel company called Starwood. This new location is the latest in a growing trend of so-called contemporary lifestyle hotels. Hyatt's line is called Andaz. Marriott has Edition. The idea is to lure customers bored of mainstream hotels. W's global brand manager, Eva Ziegler, takes her job very seriously.
We want to provide access to a world of wow. Basically help you to escape from the fears, from the mundaneness of everyday life, and come into a world where everything is possible.
That might sound attractive if you can afford it. The W's room rates in Boston start around $200. Hotel staffers wear designer outfits and no name tags because they're just as cool as you. They'll get you anything you want as long as it's legal. The hotel's general manager, Bill Bunce, remembers the customer who wanted a hot chocolate bath.
To get all of that ready and get it in the tub and marshmallows floating. And they wanted it hot, too, which is even more difficult to do. But we were able to do it.
And put it on the bill.
That's the other key part to it, whether they want to pay the price. You can tell me whatever you want, I can deliver it, but there'll be a price attached to it. So
it's a particularly difficult time to be opening up a luxury high-end hotel in an economy like we've had for the past year now.
Reed Woodworth is a hotel industry analyst at PKF Consulting. He says occupancy is down nationwide, even as hotels have been cutting rates. But Woodworth says hotel companies remember that before the recession, consumers were willing to pay about $80 more to stay in these newer, cooler hotels that don't feel like a chain, even though they are. The hotel companies are betting on that demand coming back. Here's Eva Ziegler.
W Hotels basically doesn't build hotels just today for tomorrow, but builds hotels for the long term, so that when the economy comes back, it also means we will own the upswing.
Industry analyst Reed Woodworth says investing in new locations during a downturn can keep customers loyal and interested, but it's risky.
It's still pretty much the wisdom in the hospitality world that this is going to be a rather slow climb out of this hole. So while they are riding the upswing, as it were, it still looks to be a very gradual upswing over the next few years.
Meaning it could be a long time before these hotels make money. After all, people have gotten used to paying low rates for high-end hotels. It's going to take a while to convince consumers to pay the high prices they used to pay for these kinds of hotels, even with the lure of hot chocolate in the bathtub. For NPR News, I'm Kurt Nickisch in Boston.
From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Double-digit unemployment has arrived. Unemployment has jumped above 10% for the first time since the early 1980s. Those government numbers were released today for the month of October. And they don't even count people so discouraged they're no longer actively looking for work. NPR's John Yitzty reports.
Most analysts had expected that the recession would eventually drive the unemployment rate into double digits. It finally did. October's rate was 10.2%. And if you include discouraged workers, the number of unemployed now totals more than 18 million. Today at the White House, President Obama responded by signing a bill sent to him by Congress yesterday that extends unemployment benefits for as much as 20 more weeks.
The need for such a measure was made clear by the jobs report that we received this morning. Although we lost fewer jobs than we did last month, our unemployment rate climbed to over 10%, a sobering number that underscores the economic challenges that lie ahead.
Today's unemployment report also showed overall U.S. businesses cut 190,000 jobs from their payrolls last month, While that's an improvement over September's job cuts, it still shows most employers are trimming jobs or still not yet hiring, despite evidence of growth in the economy.
We are very much still hunkered down.
That's Dyke Messenger, who runs a small manufacturing firm in North Carolina called Power Curbers. The company makes machines for paving and putting in curbs and gutters.
The U.S. business, which is dependent on housing and commercial construction, is just plain awful.
Exports to the Middle East, South America, and Asia have kept his company going, says Messenger. But he's reduced his workforce by 40%, and those who are left are only working about half time. Messenger believes he won't hire another permanent worker for at least 2 years.
I am concerned that the real recovery, and let's say the real recovery is based upon a turnaround in the jobs numbers, is not going to come now until the end of 2011.
Mark Zandi of MoodysEconomy.com agrees the situation is discouraging. And he says even though it may appear the recession is over because output is growing again, the coast isn't clear yet.
As long as we're losing jobs, as long as businesses aren't hiring, it's very, very possible that consumers just stop spending and the economy slips back into the morass.
Zandi says that to keep that from happening, government policymakers need to be aggressive and extend more elements of the stimulus package. The bill President Obama signed today, in addition to extending unemployment benefits, also continues and expands the home buyer's tax credit through next April and cuts some taxes for small businesses. But Zandi argues that because the private sector has not yet taken the baton from the government, even more needs to be done, including more help for state governments, he says.
If they don't get more help, there will be significant cuts in their employment by this time next year, program cuts and tax increases.
Zandi says the measures he's recommending would probably cost the government another $100 billion. Today, President Obama said his advisors were considering a number of additional measures to provide stimulus to the economy. Republicans take a different view. Commenting on the employment report today, Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said that more debt and more spending clearly has not worked. John Itzty, NPR News, Washington.
We are losing jobs in the U.S., even as Asia's economy is taking off, which brings us to new questions about new bubbles, not the friendly kind that children blow. The World Bank this week warned about a bubble in China's stock market, and there's also concern about a housing bubble in China. David Kestenbaum of NPR's Planet Money team is here to talk with us. Hi, David.
Hi, Robert.
How worried should we be about more bubbles? And give us a quick overview of what an economic bubble is.
Unfortunately, our working definition of what a bubble is sort of you hear a pop and you say, wow.
That was a bubble.
That was a bubble. Yeah. I mean, it can be very hard to know when you're in one. I mean, if everyone could have spotted one, we probably wouldn't be in this mess in the first place. But as you mentioned, the economy is sort of grim here. In China, things are growing. And one reason is that China forced its banks to lend out a lot of money. That money has made its way into the economy through salaries, and now there are people sitting there with money. And unlike in more developed countries, there are a limited number of places you can put it. So a lot of it's gone to the stock market or people buy houses. And so those are two places people worry you may see bubbles beginning.
Now, the China housing bubble, is it a bubble like the housing bubble in the U.S. that could pop and pop catastrophically?
Yeah, are we restarting another bubble? I spent a while asking that question on the phone today, and there's not a lot of great data in China. It does seem like in big cities you are seeing a rise in housing prices. Prices are actually rising there. But when you ask if it pops, what happens? Mm-hmm. You have to look at how people are paying for their houses. Part of the problem over here with the subprime crisis and the mortgage crisis was that people had mortgages, and when the prices dropped, they couldn't pay their mortgages, and then you get a whole chain reaction. And in China, they don't really have mortgages, so people are paying cash. And the thinking is that even if housing prices there crash, it's not going to cause a global crisis.
Now, you mentioned what the Chinese have done with their banks. Central banks all around the world have been lowering interest rates to try to get banks lending again, to try to get the economies going again. Is that, in fact, creating bubbles?
Arguably, this was one of the things that got us into trouble in the first place, right? One of the things that helped create the housing bubble in the United States. And the argument for how that happens is this. If interest rates are really low, I have money. I'm not going to put it in a savings account because it's not going to pay me very much interest. I'm going to look for some better place to put it that's going to give me a greater return. If I don't choose wisely, all that money can go to some place like housing and you get a housing bubble.
Right.
The argument is that we lowered interest rates, but you know, the global economy is still, in general, wounded. So the effect it's having is not to create bubbles so much as to just kind of restore a more normal market function.
Okay. There's more money, though, going into economies, and we would expect bubbles to possibly inflate someplace where all that money is going. Where's the money going?
I mean, some of it is going to the developing world, you know, like China and Latin America. In fact, interestingly, not everybody wants the money. Brazil recently put a tax in place on foreign investment.
Mm-hmm.
And their concern is that if people just sort of invest and pull the money out, that's not very good for the economy. But they also worry about a bubble. So there is all this money looking for a home, and not everybody wants it. There's also asset price. We see, you know, stock markets going up around the world. We see the price of gold. You see other commodities. And it's hard to know if those are bubbles or just people are feeling better about the economy. It's hard to know if these things are all little bubbles or not.
Is there any method to predicting bubbles?
That is a deep and long-running philosophical mm-hmm. question in the economic community. At the beginning of this crisis, I was at a meeting of finance ministers from around the world, and they all pretty much, when I talked to them, were of the opinion that, look, you can't predict bubbles. You know, they're only obvious after the fact, and you don't want the government messing with those things. However, that was really before things got bad. I think things have gotten so bad that you are now hearing people say maybe the government should be trying to figure out where there might be bubbles and doing something to slow them down so that we don't have a big crisis, even if it does mean the economy runs a little more slowly.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
David Kestenbaum of NPR's Planet Money team.
If you stroll down a cosmetics aisle, you might mistake the perfume collection for the guest list at a highfalutin Hollywood party. Customers bought more than 3 million bottles of celebrity fragrances from department stores last year. And we wondered, what's the appeal? NPR's Brian Reed sniffs around among the celebrity scents.
Nowadays, there are more new fragrances released in a year than there were in the 1970s and 80s combined, more than 500 of them. So perfuming is a competitive game, and as of this week, it has a formidable new player, rapper 50 Cent.
First, I have to thank everybody for coming out. I really enjoyed the process of creating a fragrance, Power by 50. I really feel like it's the smell of success.
Success is wafting through the air at Macy's in Midtown Manhattan. Fans stream out the door and around the block. If they buy a bottle of his new cologne, they get to take a picture with 50.
Laquana Book, I'm from New Jersey. I've been waiting here since probably like 1 o'clock.
It's now 5 o'clock.
Why?
Because I love 50.
Yeah.
You know, he's a great businessman of our time, and he's young, and he's a great inspiration for me.
Here's the thing about perfume. It is the single best tool for monetizing celebrity that's ever been created in the history of the world.
Chandler Burr is the scent critic for the New York Times. Yes, the New York Times has a scent critic, and he's spraying perfume on me.
You want to put some on?
Sure.
Okay.
We're sniffing, and I'm wearing a Britney Spears scent, Midnight Fantasy.
Smell that. It's a very sweet perfume. It's a luscious perfume. It is a wink at itself. And it's sort of funny because if you took Britney Spears and you added about 5 pounds of quality, this is what you would get.
Burr says fragrances like Midnight Fantasy are the best way to capitalize on celebrity. Better than clothes, music, even movies. That's because the cost of creating a perfume can be relatively low. The perfume house doesn't have to pay for the juice. That's industry slang for the stuff inside the bottle. A different company, a fragrance manufacturer, develops it for free. Then the two firms share the profits. Now, celebrity scents aren't necessarily bestsellers. They account for just about 10% of fragrance sales. Their value, though, is in publicity. Carlos Timoraus is vice president of celebrity brands at Coty Prestige, a perfume house based in New York. Coty develops perfumes for Jennifer Lopez, Gwen Stefani, and Sarah Jessica Parker. And Timoraus says having one of those names on a bottle saves millions of dollars in advertising.
The beauty of a celebrity, unlike a designer brand, is there is consumer knowledge of this brand or product from the moment you hit the counter.
Even so, Timoraus thinks the celeb scent craze may not live for much longer. He still gets about 20 new pitches a year, but there are only so many celebrities, and not all of them possess enough olfactory gravitas.
I mean, I love Tony Curtis. He's a great movie star, certainly. Some Like It Hot was one of my favorite movies. We turned that project down.
Back at Macy's, however, the smell of celebrity doesn't seem to be fading anytime soon. Remember Laquana Booker, the 50 Cent fan?
I saw you come through here once already. What are you doing?
I bought another bottle.
And you're coming back?
Of course.
She's grinning like a young girl in a candy shop.
So this is a pretty good business idea for him then, right? People like you are buying two bottles in a day.
I think that whatever he touches is going to turn into gold. It's him. It's not the perfume. Because I can't explain it. It's like an energy you carry, and people love that.
Booker says any product 50 Cent comes out with, she will buy it. Brian Reed, NPR News, New York.